creating, using their own blogs to spread the word on this issue in a way that completely overwhelmed the telephone and cable lobby. They weren't ready for it, and they were not able to manipulate the policies in the way they expected to because the public actually got involved. So that's what we try to do here, is facilitate that and keep an eye out for these opportunities where the public can really make a difference. The great thing about this media work is that you don't have to win every single battle, unlike maybe campaign finance reform where you think you've fixed one thing and then here comes another huge loophole. There are lots of opportunities where we can begin to push things in the direction of the public interest, and that's what we're trying to do day in and day out.
Well, thank you very much for your time. I've been speaking to Craig Aaron, Communications Director of Free Press, and they're found at freepress.net. Craig, thanks a lot.
Thanks so much.
That's it for Sprouts. You've been listening to an interview with Craig Aaron, Communications Director of freepress.net. Sprouts is distributed and coordinated by Pacifica Radio Network. Thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. This week's producer and host was Rip Robbins of KSVR, Skagit Valley Radio, with assistance from Joseph C. McGuire. Thank you for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts. And you're tuned to Free Radio, Santa Cruz, California, 101.1 FM here in Santa Cruz and the surrounding area, www.freakradio.org. Everywhere else, call in number 427-3772, area code 831. And coming up next, it's Bathrop's Pierre's Broadsides, 2 hours of chatter about civil rights and a special interview at 7 o'clock, hopefully, with Brian Helmley, recently acquitted of all charges in the Cinco de Mayo case of 2006 in San Jose. Stay tuned.
Where is Home? From Land by 15. You're tuned to Free Radio, as mentioned before, and the name of the show is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'm Robert Norris, and I'm going to be rolling along with you, indigestion notwithstanding, for the next 2 hours here from 6 to 8 here on Free Radio. In case you want to catch me off air, you got some secret news to impart, 831-423-HUFF. That's the HUFF line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I work with, and we're currently investigating the case of, well, actually trying to publicize and garner community support around Donna Dice, whose arm apparently was broken, fractured by an officer, or actually Sergeant Christian Lamas, two Fridays ago, out there at Three Trees parking lot near Lighthouse Field, in what seemed to be in a use of excessive force by a sergeant of the Santa Cruz Police Department in an attempt to drive away poor people from the parking lot. And apparently this effort has increased recently in terms of intensity. They're now shooing people away until 10 a.m. in the morning. You're not allowed to park there. At least that's the latest report I get from Valerie Christie, who was out there, I guess, either yesterday or today. It was yesterday, checking things out. Any reports from out there, I'd love to hear. Any reports from Parks and Rec rangers and police that are engaging in inappropriate behavior towards poor people who just happen to be in public spaces in a fashion that the police don't like, even though the Constitution of the United States of America, in fact, the basic rights to which we are entitled, Constitution or no Constitution, are being trammeled by the police. If this is happening, if you feel this is happening, if this is your sense, if you've seen this happening, I want to hear about it. And, you know, if you see some counterexamples of police officers actually standing up for the rights of the citizenry, helping people, let's hear about that, too. 427-3772 is the call-in number, 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. Around 7 o'clock today, I'm going to be, in about an hour, I'm going to be hopefully getting a call from a guy called Brian Helmley. And if you want to check into his case, you can go to Indy Bay, South Bay. That's the San Jose kind of section of the Indy Bay blog / news area. And again, Google for Indy Bay, I-N-D-Y-B-A-Y, and then go to San Jose, or actually South Bay, on the left side of the screen. And there's a story, charges dropped against the last defendant from Cinco de Mayo 2006 Copwatch case. And this is important to me because in this case, apparently, there were a number of people who observed police essentially going wild on Cinco de Mayo in San Jose, going after celebrants, and perhaps they weren't justified in their behavior towards celebrants there in the streets, but in going after cop watchers who were simply videoing and documenting what they were doing, they crossed the line big time, and that, of course, is particularly dangerous when journalists or people who are documenting or whistleblowers are attacked by police or other agencies. That attacks all of us because how else do we get our information? That's the point. He being Brian Helmley, was the last defendant. They were still going after him 2 years later. And what happened there, according to this story on San Jose Indy Bay, or actually South Bay, Indy Bay. 2 years after six local activists were arrested on Cinco de Mayo at Story and King Roads on the east side of San Jose, the Santa Clara County DA's office dropped all charges against the last of the defendants, Brian Helmley. The charges stem from Mr. Helmley's arrest, along with five others, for their participation in a speak-out against police brutality and Cop Watch on May 5, 2006. I want to remind you that, again, on May 1st, there was the huge nationwide protest, but in Santa Cruz it was particularly impressive. 3,000 or more people were estimated to have marched, and the biggest march since the peace rally of February 2003 here in Santa Cruz. And that was immense. Great numbers of people converged on the town clock demanding an end to the harassment and persecution of people whose crime are they aren't properly documented with papers. They are illegal immigrants, you know, that sort of thing. And 5 days later in San Jose, five cop watchers were arrested. And we're going to have, hopefully, Brian Helmley calling in to talk about it. I'll be reading more of the story as 7 o'clock approaches. And, of course, you can look it up yourself. We actually had Brian on the air a couple months ago. He was about to go to trial then. The trial was postponed, and he promised to call us back. I talked to him, I think it was yesterday morning, yesterday afternoon, and he promised to call back and get in touch with us. I haven't heard from him since, but I'm hoping that he will. And if he won't, then maybe we can engaging in what often seems like arcane discussions with the City Council of Santa Cruz on various issues, particularly around planning and affordable housing. Ed is going to be on the air, even in the studio with me. And we're going to be talking about the Brown Act and how the City Council has cut short public discussion on items, become less transparent. You can't really see what they're doing. And essentially, rubber stamps now more than ever, positions taken by a staff which is very opaque, i.e. closed to public input, public scrutiny, and public accountability. I mean, whoever heard of Dick Wilson, the city manager for life, ever getting a real examination of his record for the last year with the serious prospect that he might be replaced? Now, it ain't going to happen. It's never going to happen. His buddies, his associations are too strong. And now I guess his supporters would say his record is too good. And there are a lot of us who would dispute that. We don't like his record, particularly around the police department and his, and how he has treated homeless people and poor people, how his collusion with the city attorney on other issues ranging from, well, I don't want to blame him for the destruction of rent control, masterminded by Mike Rotkin for the Clearview Court and the De Anza Mobile Home Park. The last two mobile home parks that had rent control in Santa Cruz. I'm not counting El Rio because it's kind of RV-owned park. And I don't know what role Dick Wilson had. But in any case, Ed will be in the studio at noon on Sunday. And then at 12:30, we're going to be having a special call from Chris Worthington, who is a Berkeley City Council member. We've had him on the air by phone before, and he'll be on the air by phone again, hopefully. We've made plans to do that in any case. And he is probably the most liberal or progressive or radical or lefty member of the Berkeley City Council. He's tried to rein in the drug war, to pull it in, to stop it. He's tried to expand controls over the police department. He's tried to press for anti-military actions, and most recently he's been working on a Sunshine Act for Berkeley, where there is procedures at City Council that allow maximum public participation, or at least more than what they have in the current times, and requires the city to keep its records more open. And we're going to talk with him at some length about this, because we have similar problems in Santa Cruz. We've talked at length here on this show about the consent agenda, the Coonerty consent agenda rules that now make it impossible to have any meaningful comment on more than one or two of the one or two dozen items that are on the consent agenda every 2 weeks. And that whole issue, of course, will be coming up again next Tuesday when the Santa Cruz City Council meets in its final meeting of the month. I'm not prepared to discuss that tonight. I don't even think it's online yet, the agenda. They usually delay till Friday to put it online, but sometimes they're better about it. I certainly haven't received an email, which I usually do from the City Council staff. Hopefully also on Sunday we will have calling in Eric Rice. Eric was the vice chair of the Measure K Commission. He resigned 2 weeks ago. The Measure K Commission is the commission set up by voters. City Council tried to block it. City Attorney tried to block it. Police Department tried to block it. City Council succeeded in crippling it. City Council avoided appointing members for months and months and months. City Council appointed a staff that essentially has sabotaged the commission. And City Council refused to allow the commission to vote, and to meet, actually, as well as vote, for the last 6 months. That's the Measure K Commission. What does it mean? The Measure K Commission is a commission that says marijuana enforcement for all forms of sales, cultivation, use, growing, trading, whatever, are to be the lowest priority of any police activity in Santa Cruz, if such activity if such police enforcement happens on private property. I'm not quite sure why there should be a restriction to private property, but that was the restriction, and for people over 21. And there have been numerous instances. Well, the police department has claimed with Zach Friend as their main mouthpiece. When he's not busy out there pumping for the Democratic Party, he's claiming that there is a Santa Cruz Police Department has a sterling record. They have no problem with marijuana, except when they want to justify someone like Sergeant Lamas breaking or fracturing Donna Dice's arm out at Three Tree Lot. And then suddenly, oh, there's a marijuana charge. Oh, that's a good reason, you know. Although that is in public and is not technically Measure K appropriate or Measure K relevant. But anyway, Eric Rice, vice chair of this commission, has finally decided that he can't get anywhere with Public Records Act requests. He can't get anywhere through the staff. He's not getting the cooperation. It's not something that I guess is as near and dear to his heart as he thought. He can't get the fire in his belly for it, as he put it in his phone call with me today. And he'll be talking about that, I hope, somewhat on Sunday, about why he decided to quit. He was the Coonerty appointee to the commission. You can now apply. Go talk to Mayor Ryan Coonerty if he'll see you. He won't talk to me. And he's banned a number of us from his bookshop, Santa Cruz, for speaking out publicly against his sleeping ban law. But you can talk to him, and you can apply for the position if you are a resident of the city of Santa Cruz. So that's a possibility if you want to join the Measure K Commission, even though it only meets, I think it's twice a year now. That's the number of times that it's supposed to meet, guaranteeing that it won't do anything whatsoever of any note, even though a number of members on the commission, including Anita Henry and Larry True, the chair, wanted to do stuff. The rest of the commission is stacked with people from appointed by folks like Cynthia Matthews, who are interested in sabotaging or downgrading the work of the commission. Candy Jackson, the woman who gave us the harsher downtown ordinances passed in 2002 and 2003. She used to be with Jackson's Shoes. You may remember her. She's a member of the Measure K Commission now. And, of course, so it really doesn't matter in a way that it hasn't met. But in a way it does, because there was a sort of a slim majority for doing something. But Anita Henry, for health reasons and perhaps because she's demoralized, just didn't show up and doesn't seem to be answering emails much. Anita, call in, call home. She was a regular participant on the show and hopefully will be again. And an activist who herself sells medical marijuana, provides it to sick people. And the Measure K Commission, again, is about marijuana for everybody, whether you're sick or not, if you use it for various purposes, whether it's religious, social, recreational, inspirational, devotional, whatever the heck. It's after all, folks, if you're an adult and you're not hurting anyone, what the hell's business is it of anyone else? And, of course, we've been telling this story to the police department for years, but they continue to lobby against it because, you see, they have our best interests at heart. And with guns and tasers and badges and uniforms and radios and big budgets and people like Rotkin on the city council, they do know what's best because, by God, they've got the power. And if you say no, you may find yourself in a bad position, like having your door pounded on, like Brian Parkett did some months ago when he... It's a marijuana in his apartment, which he had a right to have because he had a medical marijuana card. But they were still pounding on his door. He had a right to have the police not show up at all because it's the lowest enforcement priority, and yet an undercover detective was there demanding that he be let in. Eventually, he was so upset about this whole situation, he had to move. And he actually had the courage to speak out about the Donna Dice beating or arm breaking or fracture city thing that happened two Fridays ago. He was the only person who came to city council to speak about that who was a percipient witness, although I'm going to be playing today some more testimony from other percipient witnesses on this issue. And Donna is still charged with battery. She's charged with possession of marijuana, and she is charged with resisting arrest. See, she intentionally twisted around and broke her own arm, you see. The report of Sergeant Lamas, which I don't find credible, is that she threw coffee on him. But because that contradicts every other witness testimony, I don't think so. Particularly since Lamas was investigating his own criminal behavior towards Donna Dice. I say criminal behavior because I haven't tried Lamas. He may be not guilty. Who knows? But based upon the witnesses' accounts, it is my conclusion that he used excessive force, and then to compound his crime, and excessive force is a crime, particularly when you have no justification for whatsoever for what you're doing, other than the fact that the person you're giving orders to has decided not to pay attention to you, even though you're one of those sacred people with a badge and a gun and a uniform, you know. And you have a right to be paid attention to, and you're trained to have people pay attention to you, even if you have no business doing what you're doing there. That's a pretty kind of scary thought for me. So anyway, there is a city council meeting coming up on Tuesday. We are going to be having Ed Davidson at noon and Chris Worthington, Berkeley City Council member, also running for the Assembly, state legislature, at 12:30 on Sunday. And I'm thankfully interrupted by a phone call. Let's see who's calling in. Well, if you're going to call in, you got to call in for more than one ring. Otherwise, what can I say? 427-3772, in case you don't know or have forgotten, that is the phone number here, 831-427-FRSC. And you can also call 831-469-3119, and I'll be happy to answer your calls and chat with you and pass on whatever news or information you have for the community from wherever you're at. Hopefully, if it pertains to what I'm talking about, even if it doesn't, if it concerns community issues that are in the general ballpark. I mean, if someone's life is in danger because of the fire that's spreading throughout the Corralitos area, hey, please call in and, you know, give us any updates. We'll be happy to try to be of assistance there. I'm not quite sure if we extend that far south, but I was seeing some nasty reports on the mainstream media about that. It started with 100 acres and it's jumped to 3,000 acres down there. But that's not really our forte here. We are kind of covering different subjects, and other media hopefully are covering that better than we are because they've got the eye in the sky and all that sort of thing. So, the Donna Dice report. Donna Dice, as most of you know, has been charged with battery, resisting arrest, and possession of marijuana, in essence, in my view, although I wasn't present, based upon the witnesses' accounts, because she declined to talk to a Sergeant Lamas, tried to go into her van. Lamas grabbed her, wrenched her out, and this is a 60, 61-year-old woman. I'm not sure if she's 60 or 60. I think she's 60. Slammed her against a car, slammed her down on the ground, and then at that point or shortly thereafter, her arm broke, or possibly slightly before then. Dice initially thought it was broken when she was pulled out of the van. Then her orthopedic surgeon told her that it probably happened when she was on the ground. And Lamas, apparently, as I understood this, stood on her or put his foot on her back, or no, on her front. That was, I guess, what the additional detail that came out in a more recent meeting that I had with her was. And she's been to four different medical facilities, including Watsonville Hospital, two different facilities at Dominican, and her orthopedic surgeon. And she's been x-rayed three times. And I got to admit it, I have not seen the x-rays, but the latest examination of the x-rays shows a significant fracture that cannot be dealt with and will cause her permanent injury, according to her orthopedic surgeon, according to her. We don't have the medical reports yet directly, so this is hearsay. But for my money, it comes from a reliable source, and therefore I pass it on to the community, because the fact of the matter is the police department's response is not to suspend Sergeant Lamas pending investigation, as far as I know, because we called yesterday and were told by the woman working there, a woman named Becky, that no, he hasn't been suspended. So he's on the job. We were also told by one of the witnesses who you'll hear talking today that not only was Lamas involved in this whole matter rather deeply, i.e. he's the one who's accused of excessive force for breaking her arm for nothing. I mean, marijuana is nothing. And the rest of that stuff, battery, grabbing with a cup of coffee, the claim that she intentionally threw a cup of coffee at Lamas is not credible, as far as I'm concerned, based on what I know of her, based on the other witnesses. Sounds like something that either he imagined or concocted, frankly, because there's a nasty lawsuit here in the offing, and also rather serious, you know, consequences for Sergeant Lamas if there were any justice. You know, I mean, he should be tried for assault, frankly. I mean, that's the reality of it. Is that going to happen? Not in 100 years. No. as I said to the city council, that will not never happen until hundreds of people converge regularly on City Hall making this kind of demands and presenting the evidence in a clear and convincing fashion. That would make even the district attorney in close collusion with the police department, as is his wont, that's Bob Lee, force him to make some meaningful response. Nonetheless, it is still valuable for people to stand up and publicize this kind of stuff, because I think it acts, and I could be wrong here, but I think it acts as a deterrent to that kind of misconduct by the police. So Donna went to the drum circle yesterday, where she goes with some regularity at the farmer's market. That's another place where the police attempted to unlawfully disperse a public assembly under Coonerty's new parking lot panic law, which says you can't be in a parking lot unless you have a car or a bicycle, and then only for 15 minutes if you're parking it. So no sitting under the trees, no chatting, no reading a book in your car even for more than 15 minutes, no being in the parking lot at all unless you're walking through, unless you have a vehicle. And that law has been generally ignored in the parking lot. Initially, the police tried to clear people out, but a number of us said no way, arrived with video cameras and the determination to stay with some instruments supporting the drummers, the trash orchestra in particular. I believe the Raging Grannies also showed up. And the police backed off and realized that they're instead just going to be forced to selectively enforce this law. That is to say, they can only bully people when there aren't other folks around supporting them and saying, back off. This is a public area. We've always done this. No one is being harmed. We don't care if Coonerty wants to, you know, engage in election year antics or a business-pleasing bullshit for his merchant buddies by passing these kinds of bogus laws. If the police department and the parking authority somehow thinks that they're going to declare all the areas essentially equivalent to 10 square blocks downtown a no-go zone, a forbidden zone, a closed area to, quote, protect the public safety, we have to say no. The public health and safety requires these areas be open, not closed. In fact, they're safer if they're open. And unfortunately, the only place this has been done with any regularity has been the third floor of the Riverside parking garage, which is right next to the river, where the trash orchestra rehearses pretty regularly every other Sunday or something. And then there's some square dancing a couple times a year, again, as a kind of a regular event. And the police and their little thuggy buddies and the hosts don't show up for that. Because they know they don't want to get into it. They don't want to face a confrontation with a peaceful group of community members. No, they want to selectively use this law to run off homeless people who are sleeping in these areas, even though what's needed, of course, are campgrounds where people can go sleep legally in Santa Cruz, which do not exist in the city and outside the city are inadequate and also hemmed in by various rules that make it illegal to use them more than essentially a month per year. So the Dice case is a significant case for a lot of us because it's a pretty ragged, pretty straightforward example of pretty abusive behavior. I'm trying to get these x-rays that she has put online, but Donna has a number of problems actually getting her stuff together. What's interesting is that the City on a Hill Press today came out with an article. A woman named Michelle... don't have her last name, but if you go down to any store downtown that gives away the free City on a Hill Press newspaper, you'll find a half-page story about it in which Michelle gives an interesting counterpoint from Zach Friend, the police department publicist, and Christine, who is a witness who was rather upset with what she saw and believes Donna was brutalized. And the article is pretty sympathetic to Donna Dice. It doesn't have everything I'd like. It doesn't have the website that you really should go to get more of the details, see some of the photographs of what happened, read the actual police report, read the witnesses' accounts. You can actually hear the witnesses talking on this show in the archives, which are the websites are posted there if you want to check that out. I encourage you to go check it out. An additional factor has been, I think I may have mentioned before, the part of this is part of the whole. This whole thing sort of began. It's hard to say how it began. I wasn't present. But some people are speculating that there's the summer sweeps coming up. You know, the police are sweeping the area, trying to get rid of poor and homeless people in time for the summer tourist season as a sort of a clean up the town, make it look prettier. Not necessarily because this is going to drive away tourists to see poor and homeless people or hippies or, you know, counterculture folks around, but because there's a sort of a narrow, frankly, a narrow streak of bigotry in spite of the Keep Santa Cruz Weird bullshit bumper stickers that the bookshop Santa Cruz sells. The reality is they want to provide the police with more powers to keep Santa Cruz straight, or to make Santa Cruz straight, not weird. I mean, that's my conclusion. So I think what may have happened here is Lamas came in plain clothes, as is described by Donna, and gave orders to people who didn't know who the hell he was. They ignored him, or they walked away from him, or they didn't want anything to do with him. Even if he were an officer in uniform, you can't give orders to people unless you have probable cause to believe they're engaging in criminal behavior. And the police report was, oh, there were people seen smoking marijuana in the area. The idea that this should be the basis for any kind of activity of the police department at all in this city, of course, is outrageous. Maybe somebody selling paraquat-laced marijuana, or marijuana laced with, you know, deadly toxins, or selling marijuana to five-year-olds. You know, maybe. Though there's a lot of shit that's being sold to five-year-olds and then who are being dosed by their parents with a lot more dangerous drugs than marijuana that I'm concerned about. But in fact, you have this pretext that allows the police to run around ID-checking people right and left. It's kind of like the sleeping ban, the law that criminalizes sleep after 11 o'clock at night in Santa Cruz. In a population of 1,500 to 2,000 people, there's room tonight for 40 to 60 of them. And the rest of them face this kind of harassment from the police. If they just want to walk up and say, hey, I got a suspicion of crime, you got to talk to me. Actually, you don't have to talk to them, but you can't walk away. You have to wait until they decide whether they're going to arrest you or not. Now, the idea that members of the community can be forced to stop what they're doing based on the whim of someone in a uniform with a badge and a gun, to me, is the very essence of a police state. There's no doubt about it in my mind. And while it's important that the police have powers to investigate real crimes, robbery, murder, rape, theft, corporate pollution, fraud, you know, things that are real and that and often frequently aren't investigated enough, like we heard Jillian Greenside talk on this show about how the police department has a miserable record of investigating rapes. They just really do. And when you try to bring it up, they just cover their asses endlessly. And their buddies on the city council, like Mike Rotkin, do the same. There's not a, you know, they don't want to address these issues. So the rate of investigating cases where there's some kind of conclusion is 13% compared to 39% statewide for similar communities of similar size. I mean, it's just horseshit. You know, this is a progressive community concerned about women's rights. Oh, right. No, its priorities are covering the police department's concerns, and that seems to, and that's institutionally ingrained in the power structure until we root it out. Of course, there's going to be an election in 3 months, but that's not going to make much difference, frankly, as far as I can see. Elections in Santa Cruz are decided by a kind of a combination of money and traditional organizations which have power, and increasingly now we have right-wing organizations like the Santa Cruz Neighbors and so forth who are getting more and more powerful. SCAN, as Santa Cruz Action Network, is going to become kind of moribund. So I began this as a Donna Dice report, and what's been happening with that. According to the story by Michelle in today's City on a Hill Press, Bob Aronson, who's the kind of joke police oversight person, and I say joke in spite of the fact that at one point 2 years ago he did issue a report contradicting the city manager, contradicting the mayor, contradicting the Public Safety Committee, which is supposed to oversee the police department, headed by Rotkin, Porter, and Coonerty, contradicting Deputy Chief Vogel, who was the person who was really the subject of the investigation. Who was the person investigating? Well, Deputy Chief Vogel himself investigated himself. And Bob Aronson found, well, you can't investigate yourself, Deputy Chief Vogel, because that really is, well, you're not impartial, really. So instead, you know, they assigned somebody else to, actually, Bob Aronson himself investigated in his own way, expressed his concerns, The ACLU came in and said, we suggest these changes so people stop engaging in political surveillance from the police department. That's what this is about. Vogel is investigating people who were planning a peaceful political rally on New Year's Eve. It's kind of a cultural march, a DIY last night, first night thing, celebration march. And he infiltrated undercover agents into this event, into this planning sessions of the event, which is obviously chills political activity if the police department is engaging in this stuff. And instead of getting some tough rules about this, or even some reasonable rules that are equivalent to those in other cities like San Francisco, then Mayor Matthews just sort of passed off the whole thing, and away it went. So you have a situation where Bob Aronson, although he played a positive role there by initially saying, well, you can't really investigate yourself, Deputy Chief Vogel, he's generally not played a positive role. He's pocketed, what is it, it's either $20,000 to $40,000 a year after having, he once was the independent advisor or legal attorney for the Citizens Police Review Board, which was destroyed by the Rotkin-Matthews City Council in 2003, allegedly for funding reasons. So you don't mind funding massive consultants at $50,000 to $100,000, but not a police review board at $75,000 a year. Interesting, isn't it? So, you know, they don't mind a $500,000 cost overrun for a desal plant for Camp Dresser and McKee, the group that's profiteering over in Iraq and Afghanistan, but they won't let you talk about it at City Council. They just want to kick in an extra $500,000. But, you know, try to squeeze $50,000 to $70,000 out of them for a police review board, forget it. Anyway, Aronson took over the money for the police review board, which is only $20,000 to $30,000, maybe $40,000, and was supposed to be the independent auditor. What did that mean? Well, it means if you wrote him a note complaining, he would ask questions of the police department. But the problem is you never could see his reports. He never made any written reports to the community on these issues. He was essentially a sort of it was a little, you know, I don't want to call it a junket for him, but it was a nice little salary for him for not doing very much at all. And also the main point is, aside from that, we don't get any independent police review. Anyway, he, according to this story, he said he wanted to investigate this whole thing further, even though no one has filed a complaint. And indeed, police officers have been out to the Three Tree lot where Donna was assaulted by Sergeant Lamas several times, according to witnesses' reports from the last couple of days. And they tell me that the police are doing some internal affairs investigation, supposedly to determine if there's any substance to the concerns that Sergeant Lamas may have overstepped his authority. You might say, well, here you are. It's good. The police department is investigating, so they're going to make sure that nothing goes wrong or that any injustices are corrected. Of course, the problem with that is, well, there are a number of problems. One is that you're not going to know what goes on in this investigation because it's an internal affairs personnel investigation. You just have to trust them. And frankly, even if you are a friend of the police department, it's not really a good idea to trust the agency that's supposed to be looking at itself, because the temptation is great to cover your butt. Otherwise, you might have to make some significant changes. And if you have a city council that is compliant and a city manager that's been supporting you to the hilt for 25 years, since 1984, 23 years or so, 22 years, 24 years, in any case, since 1984, then you really don't have to worry about it at all, because you're not going to get, if anybody says a word that's critical of the police department, like Tony Madrigal a year ago at the Halloween triple fine zone proposal that was cooked up to essentially raise revenue for the city, I think. But maybe it was also based on the notion that if you stiffen the penalties, you'll make people more well-behaved, or at least it'll give more justification to the blue shirts that are marching around in military parade on Halloween and New Year's Eve. It's pretty frightening to watch that kind of goose-stepping going on. That's exactly what it looks like, to see these groups of 6 to 8 officers marching into a crowd in military formation. Looks like they're training for some kind of, you know, coup attempt or something. It's disgusting, frankly. And I say that because if we were fighting some kind of white supremacist gangs in Santa Cruz that were regularly bombing, Planned Parenthood or burning down low-income housing. I mean, of course, we'd be arming the people ourselves, probably, to fight that kind of stuff. But, you know, there might be some justification for that kind of militia-like activity by the police department. But instead, you know, you have this terrorist bullshit myth that has spread throughout the country and invigorated the police department and all its right-wing buddies based upon, essentially, politicians grabbing more and more power, whether they're Democrats or Republicans. You know, you talk to Obama, and he wants to up the army by 100,000 and more troops in Pakistan, Afghanistan. No meaningful withdrawal from Iraq in terms of getting everybody out of there real fast, as been proposed by some Democrats and by people like Nader and Cynthia McKinney and others on the left, by me and you and 70% of the American public. But, of course, the politicians don't want to listen. People in positions of power are entrenched, and that's the problem we're facing. And we see it in miniature in the Donna Dice case. Anyway, Aronson, the police auditor, is quoted by the City on a Hill Press article, and he is supposedly interested in the issue. So that's a little new bit of information. I think what I'm going to do shortly is, after this musical break, is play a few interviews from the street, and maybe we'll even get to the interview, another interview about the Donna Dice case. And I'd like to hear from anybody out there. How do you feel? If you got anything you've seen about the case, anything you've heard, any reflections, feel free to call in. Or if you have your own concerns or problems, or perhaps you've had a lot of good experiences with the police department, you feel that, you know, they're just getting a bad rap here, that there is no real problem, that we know we have a growing crime or drug or whatever problem that justifies, equipping the police with tasers, authorizing them to use deadly force, making them so opaque that that disciplinary proceedings, unlike in any other department of publicly employed officials, is kept secret. That's the Copley decision of 2006 by the California Supreme Court. But while you ponder this, here's a little mellow mood music.
Snow Queen of Texas left Paris in a cloud of smoke. They say she may be beaten, but I know that she's not broke. She's living in a cool green farmhouse. If you go to Houston, be quiet as a mouse.
Met her man in Beirut.
And that was Snow Queen of Texas from the Mamas and the Papas album. The Mamas and the Papas present the Papas and the Mamas, or vice versa. I'm not sure which. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. My name is Norse, N-O-R-S-E, Robert Norse. If you want to reach me off air and denounce me or praise or give new information or just ask a question, 423-4833. On air, it's 427-3772. Here's a little more from a witness who witnessed the Donna Dice assault, assault by Sergeant Christian Lamas Friday before last out at Three Tree Lot.
Okay, it's May 12, 2008. Continuing conversation with Christine Mauricio about 20 to 2. Hey, Christine, I'm back.
You there? Yeah.
So who took you off to the side and privately interviewed? Was that Lamas or somebody else?
No, yeah, it was that officer that assaulted Donna.
And so, in other words, he was not separated from the rest of the group. He actually it was engaged in the routine in questioning and interrogating. They didn't put him aside or tell him to leave or anything.
No. Not at all.
Interesting.
They were going to take her to jail. The poor lady was crying in pain, and that's why the boss lady or man was just like, this is silly. I can't believe you're even doing this. This lady needs to go to the hospital, not jail. She's broken. You know what I mean?
Did any of the other officers or police have any conversations about this that you heard?
About what?
About the whole thing that was going on about the...
Ask me?
Did you hear them talk among themselves or about what was happening?
There was a lot of kids there. There was the kids about five or six, like, I mean, not kids, but people, you know what I mean? People about 5 or 6 feet away from me getting their own story on paper.
But did you hear police officers talk to each other about this?
Oh, no.
And did any... people who weren't involved with your group, like bicyclists or tourists or nearby residents, come over and watch and express any opinions on this?
Yeah, I'm sure there was people on the sidewalk just, like, outraged, you know what I mean, of what was going on.
Did you see or talk to anybody that you remember specifically?
I saw him, but I didn't talk to him or anything because I was just trying to deal with what was going on and trying to get out of there.
Did police interview him?
No, not the random people, I don't think.
Did police only interview those of you who are actually parked there and hanging out there?
Yes.
How many of you would you say there were in that group?
I'd say about... I'm not sure. Different times, different calls for different people. So I think it was about 8 or 9 people. How many people were there? About 10? Less than that?
Like 10 to 15.
Yeah, 10. About 10.
Okay.
There's 6 in RV,
but... So, Christine, you're with Sarah, right? You guys were sitting with Sarah that day.
Yeah, I was sitting in her driver's seat. She was in the passenger's.
Okay, now, had you had any intoxicating fluids or beverages, or was your vision...
Nope.
How old are you?
The keys were not in the ignition. We were not drinking. We were not smoking. We were
legal and registered.
Yeah, the car is legal, registered, everything. You know, I mean, the owner was sitting in the car. He's not in the driver's seat, but, you know, it was fine. You know, everything was
good. Do you have any hearing problems or vision problems that would, you know, make you not see or hear clearly?
No.
How old are you?
20.
Okay.
I'm 21 this year.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
Did I get drunk? Well, that sounds good. I think I'm going to play this tape on free radio, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
And that's, of course, just what happened. I just did play it, although that was about 10 days ago. That I took that interview shortly after the actual assault, day or two after the assault, on May 9th, actually 3 days after, I guess. If anybody has seen anything more about this, I please love to hear from them because, hey, Donna is going to be going to court in June, and she's going to need all the help she can get, and there will eventually be a lawsuit around this issue, I think. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi. Are you on the air right now?
We are all on the air.
Hi, Robert.
Hi.
Wait a minute. Let me turn my radio off.
You better turn your radio off.
Yeah. I was downtown today, and can you hear me?
I can. We're talking to...
Leela. My name's Leela. Remember me?
I do, Leela. Go ahead.
I remember you. I got to talk fast because this phone keeps shorting out, but
okay.
I just think it's atrocious that they've taken most of the benches out. Now, instead, in my opinion, I think they should have put more benches in. What if somebody's sick or elderly and walking down there and needs a rest? You have to sit on the curb and risk getting hit by a car and... What's the matter with those people?
Well, it's interesting, Leela, because there were twice as many benches mandated for Pacific Avenue in the downtown Vision Santa Cruz plan in the mid-90s. That was one of the excuses that was given, for example, for the downtown ordinances to make it illegal to sit on most of the sidewalk because
Excuse
they were saying...
Excuse me, could you talk a little louder, please?
Okay, well...
If you can.
Sure, I'm doing what I can. I mean,
Thank you.
Can
I've just gotten real hardy.
Sure. Can you hear me now? Put the phone up to your ear then.
Yeah, thank you.
Sure. I mean, one of the reasons why they allowed the downtown ordinances to pass, making it illegal to sit on the sidewalk, is that they claimed there were going to be a lot of benches. Are you with me?
Mm-hmm.
And when we went to Steve Hammack 5 or 6 years ago and asked him to document why benches were pulled out, when it happened, was there a public hearing, he's had absolutely... I think he had one record of one bench when, in fact, half the benches have been removed. So, you know, and we see this happen frequently. Benches are pulled out from in front of Borders. Benches are pulled out from in front of the Pacific Cookie Company. Benches are pulled out from in front of the Del Mar Theater. Fundamentally...
And at the Metro.
Yeah, and in front of the Metro and across the street from the Metro. Instead, in their place suddenly appears... a change-making machine, which makes it illegal to sit down within 50 feet in any direction on the sidewalk. It's a way of...
You're kidding.
Yeah, no, it's true.
This is sickening. I just can't believe it.
It's true. And it's part of the plan. This is being done in across the country by business improvement districts, because they see they improve business, they think, by eliminating the street culture, by eliminating the right of the people to use the public sidewalks and streets other than for commercial purposes. And they figure commercial purposes, just keep walking, go into the store, sit down, buy your, you know, $4.50 latte, and shut up.
I'm a disabled woman, and I can't walk the whole mall. I have to sit down and rest sometimes. And what if, you know, I can just imagine in the future seeing little old people walking and, you know, getting confused because where can I sit down? There's no place to sit. Mothers with children. So fucking what if somebody wants to take a nap on the bench? You know?
Well, I can understand that, you know, that if all the benches were taken up by people taking naps, it would be difficult for the mothers and children you speak of to be able to use the benches.
Well, why didn't they put in more instead of less?
Well, that's the point.
That bad, huh?
And not only that, they have removed, you know, they, of course, they used to be, as you may remember, I don't know if you were around, Leela, before 1989, the earthquake. You may remember the red brick planters that were up and down Pacific Avenue.
Oh, that was so nice.
Right. I mean, there used to be literally hundreds of places to sit, and people would come out and sit on the brick planters and eat, you know, the waist-high planters. But the police and the city council under Marty Wormhout, John Laird, Mike Rotkin, decided to remove all that because the police department wanted to have a mall cleared of all vegetation so they could surveil it more easily. And also, the downtown businesses didn't want people lingering. You still there?
Yeah.
They didn't want it. That's one of the reasons there's no plaza downtown, because the claim is that a plaza would simply be a magnet for homeless, druggy, hippie, alcoholic, bums, skunks, punks, and drunks. Right? So that...
It's been pretty bad, and I don't know if this is real... True or not, I heard they're going to make it illegal to smoke cigarettes downtown.
There's a lot of that going around, too, although I'm less sympathetic to smokers, except that I realize, you know, they've made it illegal to smoke in huge, huge areas in all city parks.
I almost got a ticket. I had no idea. I used to cut through the park every morning on my bike and stop and have a peaceful cigarette.
Right.
And I came out of the park and policemen saw, are you there? Are you there?
I'm here.
Thanks. This phone's really old or something.
Go ahead.
And a policeman stopped me and he said, did you know you can get 175 or whatever $5 ticket for smoking in the park, and I said, you got to be kidding. I didn't see any signs or anything. Are there signs there?
I'm pretty sure there are signs, but the point is, Leila, that for a large, huge park like San Lorenzo Park,
yeah,
it's completely unfair and unrealistic for there to be no smoking anywhere in the park.
That's ridiculous.
I can understand it, you know, in areas that are close to a children's playground or close to a place where people are eating, maybe. But
and
the
if
fact
you're worried about secondhand smoke, stay away from smokers.
Well, yeah,
they should have their own area, maybe.
There should be areas for people to smoke, and much as I think it's a stupid habit, and I think, you know, it's a much more dangerous drug than marijuana or LSD or any other. Frankly, you know, it's probably more toxic than heroin if you look at the figures.
Well, if you'd been locked up as many times as me in mental hospitals where you had to climb the walls and pray every day you were getting out just so you could have a cigarette, you just, a lot of us just feel like, forget it, man, forget ever quitting, because you get this feeling almost like you have to make up for lost time.
Leila, let me ask you, because I know we've been concerned about how things are on the psych wards in Santa Cruz.
I haven't been there since Christmas time. I was sent there because I made just an offhand comment at my rehab house, and the worker wouldn't give me my medicine, and of course that's what they push, the main thing, push the medicines on the people and get them all screwed up. And some of them might help, but I've never been a believer in forced drugging. And
now, are you currently taking medicine? Or?
Yes, I am, and I'll tell you, I'm not too clear. It just.
What kind of medication are you?
I'll tell you, Robert, I can't remember what it's like to be clear without any meds. But maybe there's one or two that might help me.
Leila,
are some very, very bad.
Leila, hello. What medication are you taking?
Well, I'm taking this stuff called Seroquel, which is really bad. Every time I take it, I bump into walls and I hurt myself, and I don't think that's necessary. I think most psychiatrists tend to overprescribe.
What's your condition in terms of what are you taking the medication for?
I don't believe in labels. I'll just say I have some problems.
Yeah.
So what? Everybody has problems.
Okay. And rather than go into it, because I got about to call in at 7.
Well, I just
thank you for calling in.
To be aware of what's going on downtown. What are they going to do? Have policemen with machine guns down on every corner like they do in Lima, Peru?
You know, I think there's an increased militarization going on, and I appreciate your calling in and raising the issue of the benches, because that's, you know, for some people think, oh, I can just go into a cafe and sit down, but not for people who don't have a lot of money.
I know.
It's a real issue. Thanks for calling in, Leila.
Well, nice to talk to you, Robert.
All right. Same here.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. And hoping to get a call shortly from Brian Helmley. In fact, in anticipation of that call, I'm going to read you the story on San Jose Indy Bay charges dropped against the last defendant from Cinco de Mayo 2006 Cop Watch case. Racism and inequality alive and well in San Jose's justice system. Come out and support community members who are defending their families and each other from police and judicial misconduct and from cop watchers who were attacked and arrested on Cinco de Mayo 2006. And this is the press release. For immediate release, charges dropped against the last defendant from Cinco de Mayo 2006 Cop Watch case, 51208 San Jose. 2 years after the six local activists were arrested on Cinco de Mayo at Story and King Roads on the east side of San Jose, the Santa Clara County DA's office dropped all charges against the last of the defendants, Brian Helmley. The charges stem from Mr. Helmley's arrest, along with five others, for their participation in a speak out against police brutality in Cop Watch on May 5, 2006. A press conference has been called by Mr. Helmley and his supporters for 12 p.m. on Wednesday, May 14th, and maybe we'll hear more about that if Brian calls in, at the Santa Clara County Superior Court. Mr. Helmley, the last of the six defendants, the East Side Six, as they called themselves, received written verification that all charges have been dropped against him in the interests of justice. This is a stark contrast to the treatment of the other defendants who were either convicted or were convinced by their public defenders to settle for charges that included battery on an officer, unlawful assembly, and resisting arrest. After 2 years of fighting these charges to defend the legal right of the people in this country to observe and record police behavior, the racism that we were trying to confront on Cinco de Mayo was borne out by the way the legal system treated us. Of the six of us, I was one of two white people and I was the only one who could afford a private attorney through help with, from my family, and I think that those are the only reasons why my charges were dropped, said Mr. Hemley, or Helmley. I commend the DA's decision to drop the charges against my client, said Matthew Soroka, Mr. Helmley's attorney. In the face of intense pressure from the San Jose Police Department to continue with the trial, the DA's office made the right decision. The press conference this Wednesday will include Mr. Helmley, co-defendants from the East Side 6, perhaps we can hear more about it if he calls in, and several participants in the Debug Complaint Intake Program, a group of families assisting each other in seeking justice in police and judicial misconduct cases, whose experience highlights a pattern of abuse and ineffective legal system in San Jose. That could be our man calling in right now. Let's see who that would be. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi.
Hi.
Is Robert Nurse there?
Yes, speaking. You're on the air, actually.
Oh, I am. Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good. Who's this?
My name's Melinda Pillsbury Foster.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know I was calling a radio show, but that's fine.
You are. What's the deal?
What's the deal? Well, actually, I was calling to talk to you about Clive Boustred.
Oh, about Clive Boustred?
Yes.
You know,
well, I call it Boustred, but there you are.
Oh, are you able to call me back, like, in about 20 minutes?
I can always call you back.
Because this is a conversation. Are you here to ask me questions, or are you here to give information?
Well, I was actually here to give you information.
Well, I'm interested in that, but I'm expecting a call on this line from a guy who is brutalized by the police and has just been through the ringer for 2 years and got all the charges dropped against him. Let me ask you to call back about 7:25.
I will call you back at 7:25.
And if you don't get through, just keep trying. The show goes on till 8.
Okay, that is fine. I will do that.
And your name again is?
Melinda Pillsbury Foster. And I was fascinated by your last name because there's a lot of New Englanders with that last name.
All righty. Well, thank you, and we'll talk more about it, Melinda.
Okay, you take care.
You too. Bye-bye. And again, I'm kind of waiting for this call from Brian Helmley. Hopefully he will call. He was supposed to email me some stuff, some more stuff about this, but that hasn't happened yet. I will continue reading this story, which you can yourself check out on Indie Bay, South Bay. Again, you go to Indie Bay, then you go to Indie Bay, South Bay, and then you look for the story, which again is headline, Charges Dropped Against the Last Defendant from Cinco de Mayo 2006 Copwatch Case. 2 years ago, on May 5th, 2006, a Cinco de Mayo celebration took place to be followed by a copwatch to observe and record police behavior towards Mexicano and Latino people. The event was a response to numerous complaints of police racial profiling, harassment, and brutality in the East Side and downtown San Jose during Cinco de Mayo. At the intersection of Story and King, hip-hop and spoken word artists performed for a crowd of 200 mostly Mexicano and Chicano youth. Neighboring businesses gave their support by passing out free drink samples to revelers. Small teams of Copwatch participants had planned to fan out after the event with video cameras to monitor police behavior. While the police initially verbally approved the gathering to its organizers, police returned in riot gear, declared the gathering an unlawful assembly, and advanced on the crowd with batons. The police targeted the participants who were carrying video cameras and bullhorns with arrests and beatings. A performer and his companion were arrested, along with four of the Copwatch participants who were carrying video and still cameras. The citations included outrageous felony charges such as lynching, which means taking someone away from a police officer, and assault on an officer with a deadly weapon, allegedly the arrestee and victim's foot, which were later dropped, leaving the defendants to face misdemeanor charges during the next 2 years. And that could be our man calling in. For more information, if you want to contact 408-202-5605, 408-202-5605. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, Robert. This is Clive here. How are you doing?
Hey, Clive. I just got a call from Melinda.
Melinda, that's
and
right.
And I asked her to call back in 20 minutes because I'm expecting a call from San Jose. Can I ask you to do the same?
I can call you back. Yeah, we've got some interesting news. They're trying to evict me from my home.
I want to hear about that. I know that you've been doing a lot of work. We've had you on the air talking about how the deputies had a special treatment for you. Let's call back. I would say call back around 7:30.
I'll call you at 7:30.
Sounds good. Thanks. Again, I'm hoping to get a call from old Brian Helmley. And I think what I'm going to do is try to go back to maybe an earlier report on this whole issue, which I'm going to have to find by going to the appropriate... Well, while I'm searching around, let's hear a little music. Stay tuned. Mamas and the Papas again, and the name of that one, in case you haven't heard it, and it's kind of little heard, is Shooting Star. Tune to Free Radio 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathurst Spears Broadsides. We're waiting for a call from Brian Helmley. And while I'm waiting, I want to remind you that those of you who have experienced police misconduct, and maybe you don't want to call in and talk to me on the radio, or maybe you're uncomfortable talking to me off the air for some reason, or you want to talk to somebody else for one reason or another. There's a guy called Lloyd who's working with a group that's called the Coalition for a Countywide Community Dialogue on Race, Poverty, Equality, and Justice. You don't even have to say that fast five times. They're trying to engage in overcoming racism and building a racially just county. They're doing listening and documenting sessions. The next one coming up is June 17th, 6:30 to 9:30, Tuesday, June 17th. At the Inner Light Ministries, 5630 Soquel Drive, Soquel. They are also, this isn't their official position, but Lloyd, who works with them and is on their planning group, or comes to their planning meetings and invited me to come to one of the last planning meetings, he has volunteered his number as a cop watch number, and that number is 457-2406, by which I mean he is documenting and is willing to talk to you about and record any concerns you have about the police department that you've experienced yourself recently. Again, 457-2406. Lloyd is his name. 457-2406. I'm actually going to give him a call to see how things are going. You can also contact the organizers, Wanda Knight, 246-0228. Wanda Knight, 246-0228. Or Simba Kenyatta, 459-9349, 459-9349. I'm hoping you can put all these numbers on the Huff website, which will have this show archived later, but that may take some time. If you miss any of these numbers, try to remember the 423-HUFF Huff number. Call me, ask for them. I will call you back. Hopefully you have a phone, though you might not, and give them to you. If not, you can always come to a Huff meeting or a meeting of the Human Rights Organization. That meets every Saturday at 2 o'clock. That's at the Firefly Cafe. There's a meeting of the Human Rights Organization, and that's at 131 Front Street, in case you don't know where the Firefly Cafe is. Again, 2 o'clock on Saturdays. Huff meets Wednesday mornings, 9:30 to 11:30, basement of the county building in the cafeteria, so-called American Cafe, which is the county cafeteria in the basement, 9:30 to 11:30. Or you can call me at the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. I've gone online to look up more about this press conference that happened 2 days after the story I just read you in San Jose. And this is by so-called San Jose Downtowner. San Jose cop watcher has charges dismissed. Community members speak out. There's some photos. It's, again, at the South Bay, Indy Bay website if you want to check it out. Today's press conference featured, this was about a week and a half ago, or 2 weeks ago, Brian Helmley, whose charges from his arrest on the Cinco de Mayo 2006 for cop watching were dropped on Monday. Marulo Custodio goes on trial with her two sons on Monday, May 19th. And Raj Jayadev from Silicon Valley Debug, which is a kind of an online news service similar to Indy Bay, which I recommend you check. Again, it's Silicon Valley Debug, capital D-E, capital B-U-G, Debug. It's at www.siliconvalleydebug.org, who hosts a complaint center for police and judicial misconduct cases on Sundays at 2:30 p.m. at Debug, located at 701 Lenson Avenue in San Jose every Sunday. There's some pictures of Brian Helmley talking to people in front of the court. Brian expressed his appreciation for the support of his co-defendants and from other cop watchers in the area, as well as the Debug Community Intake Center that offered encouragement and resources during the 2 years of court dates. He also stated that while he has been able to afford to hire Matthew Soroka, who is a private attorney who did a great job thanks to economic help from his family, the other East Side 6 defendants, and he mentioned this before, have been very poorly represented by their public defenders and have been bullied into settling for charges that they knew they were innocent of. 95% of all cases in California courts are handled by public defenders whose caseloads run at 120 to 150 cases at any one time, compared to 40 to 60 cases for a private attorney, according to this story. So they are eager to convince their clients to settle rather than go to trial. And here's a woman giving a name, Marilu Custodio, Ms. Custodio was, according to the story, beaten, and one of her sons was tased when they responded to a call for help from one of her other sons who had been stopped by police, beaten, and tased near their home in the Evergreen neighborhood of San Jose in February 2007. And there is a news story about that, which I may read as well. Marilu spoke about the need for people who are arrested to demand their right to a trial, not just settle because their public defender says trial would be risky. Marilu, Mario, and Romel are seeking support from the community at their trial starting Monday, I guess it was this Monday, May 19th, 9 a.m., Department 24 at the Santa Clara County Superior Courthouse. And I'm going to kind of try to look in on that and see what's happening with that one. Then there's a story, another person who appeared at this press conference was Raj Jayadev. Raj spoke about the successes that the movement for police accountability has been making in San Jose recently, especially getting Joshua Herrera's gang enhancement life sentence dropped to 14 years in prison, and now helping Brian Helmley get his charges dropped in the Cinco de Mayo 2006 East Side 6 cop watch case. Raj called for people who are caught up in the criminal justice system and their families to not give up and to keep fighting since it is possible through collective actions in defense of each of them. Raj also invited people with police and judicial concerns to come to the Debug Intake Center on Sundays at Debug Office, again at SiliconValleyDebug.org, if you want to check that out. And there's finally that's actually the sum of what has been written on the subject. A Case for Struggle, Real Revolutionary Victimized in San Jose. Here's a story about an old friend of mine, Raul Curley Estremira, veteran Bay Area activist and former Black Liberation Army political prisoner, is attacked by out-of-control police. I'm going to read this story. This is a comprehensive narrative compiled and provided by the Black Berets for Justice and Community Defense. This is an extensive text, supplemental information, so that you, the reader or activist, can understand your own rights, how they can be violated, and how they can be fought. Please redistribute, re-edit far and wide, and contribute your words and comments. They are much welcomed, no matter what they have to say. See and download the flyer, and so forth. A Case for a Struggle, Curley and the Story of the South Bay, by El Vos. On Super Tuesday, November 7, 2006, while the rest of the San Francisco Bay Area was most likely glued to the television watching election results, longtime activist Raul Curley Estremira, whose Muslim name is Tariq Al-Amin, was struggling for his life in Santa Clara County Jail. Raul, better known by his nickname Curley, and he's been down in Santa Cruz supporting activists and protests against the sleeping ban and police brutality here, though not for a number of years, was pepper sprayed by an off-duty Santa Clara County deputy sheriff at the Valley Health Center, which is a branch of the Valley Medical Center Hospital, on 500 Tully Road in Eastside San Jose while he was trying to pick up his medicine, and was then later attacked by two San Jose Police Department officers while in custody that same night. Estremira, who suffers from a rare debilitating disease tentatively diagnosed as Meniere's syndrome and other ailments such as high blood pressure, has been semi-retired for full-time activism since 2004 due to health problems and requires medication to help regulate his condition. Traditionally, Curley, one of the strongest advocates around the rights and issues of San Jose's Black and Latino communities, though originally from New York, has been effectively sidelined by his health. Meniere's disease usually appears between the ages of 40 and 50 years and is a chronic and aggressive inner ear syndrome suspected to be the result of such predisposing factors as head trauma, middle ear infections, chronic or otherwise, autonomic nervous system dysfunction, toxicity, poisoning, and is marked by severe attacks of vertigo, acute attacks of vertigo that can cause nausea, progressive deafness, tinnitus, ringing in the ear, and a sensation of fullness in the ears. Those with Meniere's suffer from such vertigo, vomiting, sweating, nausea, loss of balance. Such attacks can be as episodic as only occurring in isolated incidents several times a year, as periodic as nearly day-to-day, hour-to-hour, minute-to-minute affliction, or go into extended remissions that can last for several years, a few weeks, or a few months. The progression of Meniere's disease destroys the ability for the ear to regulate fluid production within it, thus destroying or damaging the sensory cells and the transmission ability to the brain of the person affected. Its cause is unknown, and there is no known prevention or medicinal cure for the disease. If Meniere's disease is allowed to persist, it causes a debilitating vertigo, and surgery may become necessary. The surgery consists of the physical destruction and removal of the workings of the inner ear, which relieves the symptoms but causes irreversible hearing loss. Curley suffers from the most debilitating form of the disease. Prior to his decline in health, Curley had spent the better part of his 40 years fully committed to the cause of justice, a brief synopsis of which includes his involvement with Comité Apoyo Pro Apo de San Jose, that's the Oaxaca Support Committee for the Asambleo Popular de Pueblo de Oaxaca, the APPO, and the people of Oaxaca, the Committee to Free the Five, San Francisco active member, organized to free five Cuban political prisoners now inside of U.S. prisons, the Committee in Solidaridad con Cuba y Latino America, San Jose, organized in order to do popular outreach and awareness work around the progressive strides made by Cuba and other Latin American nations, Bay Area Cuban Alliance Network, Redwood City, organized to expose the medical, political, and social achievements of the Cuban government and work toward the restoration of diplomatic relations from the peoples of Cuba and the U.S., No More, No Mas, organized to facilitate community aid survival and awareness programs, Labor Action Committee to Free Mumia, Abu Jamal, Oakland, Straight Support of Political Prisoner and Black Revolutionary Mumia Abu Jamal, South Bay Mobilization Against the War, local anti-war organization working to stop the war in Iraq, South Bay Mobilization to Free Mumia, similarly, Mobilization to Free Mumia in San Francisco, Pueblo Unido, San Jose, he's the chairperson, organized to stop the installation of the racist Captain Fallon statue in downtown San Jose, People's United Front, Council of Elders, which included a number of people, working on justice-oriented issues as well as the release of political prisoners. This is a very long story, and apparently the details have to do with, let me go directly to the kind of the, there was a flyer that came out on this. It was pepper sprayed, apparently, and that was the deal, which can be an ordeal to be pepper sprayed. I have not been pepper sprayed. I've been in areas where pepper spray has been used. I've talked to people who have been pepper sprayed. On Tuesday, November 7th, after having to yet again argue just to receive his life-saving medication from a pharmacy holding it hostage, Raul Curley Estramira, a longtime community activist, was attacked for asserting his human rights for decent health care while leaving Valley Health Center at the Eastside San Jose. The security guard at the clinic blindsided Curley, pepper spraying him from behind as he was walking out of the clinic. Curley, without knowing who was attacking him, defended himself as best he could, eventually leaving the clinic to an awaiting vehicle for his safety, only to then be approached by several SJPD, San Jose PD, vehicles prepared to arrest him for acting in his own safety interests. Curley tried to approach the officers to complain that someone had pepper sprayed him. He then was informed that the person who had assaulted him was an off-duty sheriff and was charging him with assault on a police officer with a deadly weapon, a trash can that he flung in the direction of his attacker after being blinded by the continuous use of pepper spray in a desperate attempt to remain conscious, only to be then handed over to the SJPD, who proceeded to harass and brutalize him, resulting in Curley being rushed to the hospital because of the injuries suffered during transportation while handcuffed in custody, and still be denied food, his medication, and further medical attention. I want to remind listeners that while Donna Dice was not pepper sprayed, after her arm was broken, she was placed in handcuffs, held there for half an hour before she was transported to the Watsonville Hospital. So these cases seem to come up in different localities. Valley Health Center, known as Chaboya Medical Clinic, used to be part run in harmony with the Eastside San Jose community, with the majority of workers that represented were accountable to and part of the community they were serving. Now, with the new corporate-styled owners, the service has diminished, even though an automated system established for the patient's convenience supposedly exists. Patients are made to wait 2 to 4 hours for their medication due to the fact that the current employees do not want to open other available windows, including the handicap window. Patients now wait weeks to get appointments, at which they are forced to wait even more hours to actually have, long after their scheduled time or after hours in the urgent care receiving subpar medical attention. Now the relationship between community and the clinic has deteriorated to the point that it is a constant conflict for patients just to get the basic medication or medical attention they need to save their very lives. Because the new clinic does not represent the community has not complained except among themselves. And if this were not enough, now they are physically attacking members of the community. Us, the very people they're supposed to be serving, enough is enough. We say no more. Come and join the community in saying no more by demanding that more Spanish-speaking employees and translators are hired, that the clinic services reflect the demographics of the community, an end to the pervasive racist attitudes, behaviors, policies, and practices of dehumanization against patients and the Eastside community by the Valley Medical Clinic. We are human beings, not cattle. That the automated telephonic prescription refill system and pharmacy procedures be revamped so that they serve the needs of the community and not the interests of the hospital and its employees. Drop the charges on Raul Curley Estramira and remove all pepper spray from all medical clinics. And there was a protest back in November of 2000. Strange, it says 2006 when the assault was 2007, but it was on 2006 that was the assault. So this was after the same month there was a protest. So I'm going to see if what's happening with Curley, who apparently is also going to trial. I know Curley personally, so it's a matter of some concern to me. He and others supported those of us who were arrested for serving free food in Santa Cruz, those of us who were arrested for serving free food in San Francisco with Food Not Bombs. Curley was a supporter of activist Jim Costner when he was assaulted for putting up Mumia posters on Pacific Avenue. He was a supporter, I believe, of Steve Argue, and Steve was jailed for trying to sell the street newspaper Street Spirit in 1998 by an officer who's still on duty, I believe, Garner, officer. I call him Grim Grip Garner. A lot of these issues have not been resolved, and while it may seem a little bit far-flung and far-flown, and whoever heard of Curley Estramira, and it's another community over the hill. I guess the thing that I'm asking is what's happening here in Santa Cruz, and we have a coalition that's talking about overcoming racism and building a racially just county, the Coalition for a Countywide Community Dialogue on Race, Poverty, Equality, and Justice. I think it would behoove them to get in touch with these folks over the hill who are fighting this stuff and have been fighting this kind of thing for years, yet I don't know that there are any plans to have that kind of solidarity, which makes me even more suspicious that the kind of work that the coalition is doing has to do with pushing the political careers of people like Madrigal, Simba Kenyatta, which, let me be proven wrong, please, because I'd love to see some real action come out of this. But real action means supporting people who are under attack, like Donna Dice. People are under attack, like Curly Estramira. People are under attack, like Brian Helmley. So that's what has to be done here. While we ponder this, let's let the mamas and the papas drift us off into dreamland, for those of you who like to go back 40 years. Or is it 35?
Skirts are raised, she gently sways, holy man, deceived, Lady Genevieve.
Hi there, you're on free radio. Hi there, you're on free radio.
Hello, Robert. Clive here. How are you doing?
Clive Bustrade, or is it Bustrade these days?
It depends if you're in France or England.
What would you like me to call you?
I don't mind. Either is good. Clive goes well.
All right, Clive. I know we got a call from Melinda. She may be trying to call back, but you're the main man, I got to say, since you've been working, I know, on a number of things. Websites around advising people of their rights with respect to the police, publicizing your own case where you were essentially convicted and jailed for 6 months for, what, driving up your own private road and being pursued by deputies who then menaced you and your children.
That's putting it lightly. I was sent to jail for 6 months for driving 27 miles per hour down my own private road just before a deputy tried to blow my head off in front of my children. That was by the Artful Art Danner. I noticed his wife's running for office. Is she of the same ilk? I hope not.
I have no idea. I mean, you know, it's sort of like, I don't know, these dynasties are becoming more and more obnoxiously prevalent, you know, so I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
So
the latest news is, of course, just for the benefit of your audience, after the cops tried to murder me, they filed 7 false cases against me, just slammed me with left, right, and center, which seems to be the pattern of practice when they're absolutely guilty on something and they don't have any cover-up. I sued the state. I'm on my third lawsuit against the state, and I won our first lawsuit because none of the 9 judges or the 7 cops or the 4 DAs dared to even make an appearance in a year and a half of hearing. And, of course, the courts simply ignore it when they're guilty. So we have our third lawsuit running, and then the principal defendant this time is our dear old Commissioner Irwin Joseph.
Oh, dear. Junk Justice Joseph?
Junk Justice Joseph, yes. Now, Junk Justice Joseph actually has the Attorney General has filed a motion to try and have Junk Justice Joseph dismissed from this case I've filed against him this Friday, hearing in this Friday. So guess what Junk Justice Joseph has done?
Tell me.
He's issued an order that I be evicted from my home this Friday.
For what?
He says I haven't paid my mortgage.
Have you?
My mortgage is paid.
What evidence is he using to buttress his claim that you haven't paid your mortgage?
My ex-wife and her lawyer, Vicky Perry, who seems to be the fundamental problem with many divorce cases.
I know that was one of the reasons that you originally had this confrontation because your ex-wife filed a complaint that you were, what, abusing your children or something?
No. She didn't do that. No, I've never had any. I'm a wonderful father. CPS came and investigated me once from her call. And, of course, there wasn't anything to hide or cover up. She did, on the day that they tried to murder me, make a 911 call claiming that I was, let me get it right, I was an elite forces militant. I was heavily armed, very dangerous. What else had I done? I'd assaulted her boyfriend, and I was likely to harm her and our children, according to her.
Had you? Well, rather, that's kind of ancient history from a couple of years ago. But let me get back to this this lawsuit.
Latest one.
This lawsuit. I mean, you are trying to get what from who with the 3 lawsuits you're doing?
Well, the first lawsuit I filed against the state for attempted murder, for kidnap, malicious prosecution, for wiping out my company. Now, as we get deeper into understanding what's going on in the government, it appears that they utilized my ex-wife for alternative means. The companies I was building, the company called Infotelesis at infotelesis.com, we were building very high-speed internet, and we're coming into any country via space with our internet connections, which we would provide up to gigabit per second connections, which is way faster than anything on the market still. But unbeknownst to me, I was good at technology. I didn't know anything about what was going on in the government. I didn't even know the Federal Reserve Bank was a private bank and that they make money out of nothing and that they control our government. And
let's not go there at the moment, but go ahead.
Yeah, that's real interesting. In fact, you could do a whole whole show or a couple of shows just on that.
Well, there's a whole movement based on
that situation.
But, I mean, you know, for example,
there's some interesting stuff which we found since then which links in. We're finding that right from the Federal Reserve Bank through the IRS, there are these accounts all the way down to the county level. Now, these courts even have their own account with the Dun & Bradstreet number and EIN number and everything else. And they're squirreling the money into these accounts and using it for their own personal uses.
You mean like Commissioner Joseph is, you're suggesting?
All of the government, yeah.
Do you have any documentation of this?
Yes, we have. In fact, we have a crew in our Copper Cards group who's documenting that. And
now you have several websites people can go to. Why don't you give them so people can just determine whether you're some raving paranoid who should be completely dismissed or somebody with some new information that needs to be considered?
Well, there's some real interesting new information on our website, our libertyforlife.com. That's liberty, F-O-R-L-I-F-E.com, has a tremendous amount of research.
Liberty for Life, in the usual fashion, L-I-B-E-R-T-Y?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, go ahead.
F-O-R-L-I-F-E.com.
Yeah.
And we have the first article is quite astonishing. A while back, we submitted a report on what the Department of Veterans Affairs had reported, that around 75,000 U.S. troops were dead from the Gulf War. And we got a lot of flack from that by people saying, nonsense, they're not dead. And, of course, all we're doing was quoting numbers out of an official...
By the Gulf War, you mean the first Gulf War or the second war?
Yeah, the report incorporates...
Which war?
The report, it's an August 2007 report, incorporates all of the soldiers who partook in the Gulf War, which started in 1990 through to 2007.
I see. So the ongoing Gulf War,
yep,
so to speak.
Now, astonishingly, we weren't reading between the lines. Because right there in the report, it indicates that 6.8 million U.S. troops partook in the war.
Now, before we go any further, you know, we began this discussion with...
Let's just push this. We'll get rid of this subject real quick. And then a little bit further down, it says that 4.5 million troops are alive today. Do the math. 6.8 minus 4.5. That means 2.3 million U.S. troops are dead.
Well, yeah, they could have died for any number of reasons.
That's what causes, but someone on active duty in 1990 is not dead of old age by 2007.
Well, uranium-depleted weapons can cause some problems.
That's a bit of a problem, yeah.
Yeah, let me get back, Clive, to you. You called in with your concern that you're, you know, the Irwin Joseph, or Junk Justice Joseph, as I call him, mainly because of his rulings in homeless cases. He's an amiable enough guy, but I don't like his judicial rulings a bit. He ruled that, you know, that camping is not a necessity for those who have no place to go. I guess, you know, they can, sleep standing up? I'm not sure what his point is. But that was his decision in the Camp Paradise case in 2001, and one of the problems I have with him. But the problem you're having is that he's ruled that he's trying to evict you from your house based on allegations made by your wife. And in a case where you think collaterally, you've sued him and a bunch of other judges around this incident, which you call attempted murder, a number of other things, seizure of your property, malicious prosecution. Grand theft auto and so forth, stemming from the incident on the private road where the deputy tried to stop you by pointing a less than lethal but still pretty hefty weapon.
No, you got it completely wrong, Robert.
Ooh. Okay. Sorry.
He shot at me with a less lethal. Now, it's not called a less than lethal. That's
less
a different
lethal
type of. It's a less lethal. Now, within 15 feet, it's absolutely deadly. In fact, it's more deadly than a sidearm.
But luckily, you had your window up.
Well, no. It didn't hit my window. If it hit my window, I'd be dead.
What did it hit?
It hit the side panel of the car door.
And this is a deputy standing next to you, and you had your children in the car, and he was...
Children in direct line of fire.
Right.
Trying to blow my head off. From that range, from 5 to 7 feet, that weapon would have blown my head apart.
And this was
like
this is on your own property at your own house.
Yep.
This is about three, four years ago, right?
2003, March 10, 2003.
Right. So let me sum up here in terms of what are you looking for people to do What's the latest development that we think we should be aware of? Are there any court dates coming up, or should we pass the hat for your mortgage? What's cooking here?
No, the mortgage is paid off. I don't owe anything on my mortgage. Now, I am suing the bank, and we'll encourage people to do the same thing for the Federal Reserve fraud that's going on. And we have a program and Copper Cards for people, particularly anyone who's in foreclosure. They should get in touch with Copper Cards. That's like the metal copper. Cards as in playingcards.com.
Now, I want to point out that that you may sound like a lunatic to some, but I know attorney Kate Wells values some of what you're saying with
now,
some.
Kate is our chief counsel at Copper Cards.
Oh, really? And so, yeah. So we're now only talking www.libertyforlife.com. Another website is www.coppercards.
Coppercards.com, yeah.
.com. So those are two websites people can go to get more information. Anything further? Because I only have 20 minutes left in the show, and I'm running to do a couple of things. And if you want,
yes,
you're welcome.
One thing I should put on the show, which would be useful, Robert, is that the methodology Vicki Perry has used to call for this clearly unlawful order is the exact same methodology she used to call for a patently unlawful order
now,
in February
who,
of 2003, which she used to, which who, they then used Vicki Perry.
Lawyer who's Vicki? Hold it. Who's
the
Vicki?
Lawyer. Who, my ex's lawyer.
Right.
And I'm Maria Tushatska's lawyer. The methodology she's used in this case to get this clearly unlawful order to evict me from my home is very similar to methodology she used to get an emergency order to grant my former personal assistant access to my children, which what? She was barred from by a stipulated
so
order.
So the problem with this kind of discussion on the air is it's so arcane and complex.
But you see,
yeah.
To put it down, what's important in this, which is simple matter, is I'm concerned that the sheriffs are going to run up here and try and murder me again. They used this technique in 2003. They tried to murder me. They shot at me.
Well, now murder and shooting at you are two different things. I mean,
generally it's the same consequence when you shoot at someone.
It may be the same consequence. Murder indicates a plan to kill.
Correct. That's what we filed, and that's what we.
You have any evidence that the deputies in question got together, decided let's get killed Clive, and then we came after you, or was it? Usually, it's often the deputy thinks this guy won't stop.
No,
I'll shoot
him. We have evidence from the 911 tape that they had set up an ambush beforehand, and it was pre-planned.
Really.
Yeah.
Is that evidence on either of these websites?
You can actually get that evidence off if you go to the Liberty for Life, go to Proof of Government Abuse, and on that page you can download our current lawsuit against the government, which has a lot of that information in it. Of course, if you go down to the courthouse, we have 380 megabyte files in the courthouse with all that evidence. Another very interesting document on that website is the opening brief I filed for the case they maliciously prosecuted against me for driving at 27 miles per hour.
I'm going to, just to make sure I'm not dealing with a lunatic here, Clive, I'm going to give a call to Kate Wells to see if she believes you, because after all, even though, you know, it sounds like...
Robert, you know, what's quite astonishing is, you know, these things, when they happen to you and you get all these things filed against you, you get that sort of question sometimes. However, what sort of lunatic goes and blows up the World Trade Center? What sort of lunatic goes and invades the nation of Iraq and murders millions of people? What's astonishing in our nation is the lunacy of incompetence of understanding what's actually going on around us.
Well, you make a good point, Clive.
And when you have a government who comes after a CEO of a next-generation telecommunications and Internet company, and tries to murder him in front of his children.
That's you.
There's no question with respect to that happening. It's all on the record. The cops have admitted to it. In open
so
court.
I will encourage people to go check out Liberty for Life to see the evidence that deputies set up an ambush for you specifically to kill you as CEO of this company, and people can make their own decision. I invite you to call back again on Sunday if you'd like. Shows from 9:30 to call between 9:30 and 12. We could talk some more.
Excellent, Robert.
In the meantime, don't get evicted from that nice house of yours, but invite me over for one of your nice parties.
Well, you must come by. Come by this weekend. We can chat some
more. Is there a time frame? Are you about to be evicted, or do you have more time on this?
No, the order is to evict me on Friday, but it's a void order. One must understand, Irwin Joseph is a principal defendant in my lawsuit against the government. There's absolutely no way he can ever obtain subject matter jurisdiction over me. Now, this is things people need to learn. His order is patently void. It has no force.
Well,
it's
will
as
the
powerful
deputies
as a piece of toilet paper?
I understand, but will the
toilet
the,
paper be more useful?
Will the toilet? Will the, you know? Will the deputies with shit on their hands show up using that toilet paper to try to evict you using lethal force?
If they attempt to, they'll be doing another extraordinary violation of law.
Do you anticipate that about to happen or not?
That's what I'm concerned about, Robert, because this is what they did in February.
So this is, so you're worried that tomorrow the deputies are going to show up on your property and try to evict you by force?
They could do that. They could come up here and shoot me and say, oh, Clive drove 27 miles per hour down his private road. Or Clive wouldn't obey this order from Commissioner Irwin Joseph.
Now, do you have people up there who are, first of all...
Yeah, we have people up there.
So... Are you a man who believes in the Second Amendment?
I think one can't have the First Amendment without having the Second Amendment, can you?
And for those of you who don't know, that means the right to bear arms. So,
correct.
So you're suggesting that people who enter your property unlawfully have to be prepared to deal with the consequences, even if they're wearing badges and guns.
We have a notice on our gate indicating what happened in March 2003 that a deputy's presence here is considered a life-threatening threat. And we give our telephone number and say, please do call us if you have any issues. We'd be happy to go to court. We'd love to have a trial by jury. And we're welcome of due process.
So if a deputy arrives to, usually there's 5 days. Does the eviction order specify that the 5-day period has ended? I'm not sure if it's.
Robert, the eviction order is laughable.
I know, but it is.
Actually, I need to put it up on the web. I'm a little bit busy preparing pleadings and stuff like
but
that.
But in theory, if they believe in this order, they can show up tomorrow.
They could do anything, as they have done anything.
I know, but based upon the wording of the order, does it state tomorrow is the appropriate time?
Based on the wording of the order, they could come up here at 5 o'clock on Friday and shoot me.
5 o'clock a.m. or p.m.?
P.m.
Which?
P.m.
P.m.
Afternoon. Yeah.
All right, so if we want to talk to you live before, we should get a hold of you live. You'll be live before 5.
I hope I'll be live before 5 and after 5 as well.
Give me a call on the 423 Huff line. Let me know how things are going, just to keep me informed.
Will do, Robert.
Thank you, Clive.
Keep up the good work.
You
take care.
You too, man. Bye-bye. Yeah. Phone lines are open for those of you who would like to call in. We have 12 minutes left in the show, 427-3772. Clive Bestrade is a guy who was... the CEO of a telecommunications company operating over in Russia for a while, and I ran into him in the courthouse and began to learn about some of his legal difficulties. But let's see who's calling in. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert. I just wanted to call in and offer some help to that disabled lady that called in earlier that said she has trouble going down the mall, that you know, it said she had to stop and rest.
Go ahead, Megan.
Well, I was going to suggest to her maybe about getting a rolling walker like the one I have with a seat, although I know they're a little costly and maybe she can't afford it. And I could probably help her get one of those walkers if she'd like. So I just wanted to put that out there.
Well, that's very generous of you, Megan. Do you want to leave an email address where she can reach you or a phone number? You know what I'll do is, if Leela, if you're still listening to this call and you'd like to get some help from Megan. Andrea. Beg your pardon, Andrea.
Right. My mom's the only one that calls me that, or my close family.
Well,
you
can think
of
me as your dad, if you like. All right. So, Andrea, get in touch with me at the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Again, you too, Andrea, leave me your number there.
Sure.
And if Leela calls in and wants that kind of help,
sure,
then she can contact you directly.
Yeah, that's fine.
All righty.
All right. Thanks, Robert.
Thanks
Bye.
A lot. Bye-bye. 427-3772 is the number. Let's hear a little from another witness to the assault on Donna Dice. This is a more recent account, again, of events that happened. I believe it was Friday, May 9th, if I have my day correct. Here we go.
Hey, we're talking with...
Crystal.
And Crystal, I guess, Donna spoke with me today. She came to a meeting of the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom.
She's traumatized.
Oh, in her arm. It's a mess. It's about 1:30. We're at Al Fresco's, and... Let me move this stuff out of the way. So, you want something to eat, by the way?
Oh, no, I'm fine.
Okay. So last May 9th, Friday, around 4:30 or 5, what were you doing?
I was sitting there enjoying the view and observed a...
Where were you?
I was up at West Cliff by the three trees enjoying life and meditating. And
you sitting on a car, near your car, on the curb?
I was sitting by the log right there.
And how far away was this from Donna's RV?
Donna was like the next tree over, the first tree.
Nice.
And she was parked there in her RV. And this black car came in and parked behind her vehicle. And a guy in black clothing got out. And all he said was stop. He never said, I'm an officer of the law. He never said, Santa Cruz Police Department. He never said that. That lady, all I heard after that was screaming to walk around the RV to see this this man in black uniform with his foot in this lady's chest. Then he announced he was an officer. This is after all the screams of police brutality. Now, my friend Sarah was parked right next to her, which you need to talk to her, because she said all Donna was doing was walking into her RV, and the man said stop, grabbed her by her arm, drug her out of her own vehicle, which was her home, her RV, slammed her on the hood of her car, which coffee went everywhere because the lady had it in her hand when she was being slammed, and then proceeded to throw her into the ground and put his foot in his chest.
How many police officers were there?
I just saw one, because it happened so quickly, because as soon as he was putting in a park, they were flying out. He was just flying out of the car.
Right.
It happened so fast. I mean, all I heard was stop and screams.
Okay.
And to me, I was very appalled because I know Donna is a union worker.
Mm-hmm.
She's a retired, elderly union lady. She used to work on the docks and unload boats in shipping yards. So to me, she knows she's a sweet person, and all she was doing was having a barbecue and feeding the less fortunate when this happened. And I think they're targeting her because they made it where you couldn't have RVs up there. And Donna beat that case, and they had to paint over it and make it where the RVs can come back up there, because it's just a bunch of elderly people who like to sit and enjoy the view and smoke their cannabis. Patience.
Yeah, were people smoking cannabis that day?
Everybody smokes cannabis.
Right.
Regularly. It's a place where you can go, relax, enjoy the view, and if you're a cannabis patient and you need to take care of your medication, then take your medication. But there's still no grounds for him to attack a woman and not announce the fact that he's an officer of the law.
So what you saw was you went around, what, the front of the vehicle or the back of the vehicle?
I walked to the front, and it happened in such a split second of him getting out of the vehicle, her screaming, and him having an old lady in the ground with his foot in his chest. To me, she's like a 60-year-old lady. For one, she's hard of hearing.
Down on the ground, or with her back?
Her back was like this, and he had his foot, literally had his foot in her chest. Then he announced he was an officer, but he never announced between the time he grabbed her and the time she was in the ground, I never once heard Santa Cruz Police Department. He never announced it. I mean, if I was a female and some strange big guy in black clothing came running at me and I was in my RV, I'd shut my door too, because he never said, Santa Cruz Police Department, stop. All he said was stop.
Mm-hmm.
That could have been anybody. And in my eyes, she did the right thing. She defended herself. She went to go in her home. Some strange guy's running after her. You know, it's just weird.
Then what happened?
I left. We know an exit. I just decided to leave because he proceeded to go to the next car, and we're up there just to have peaceful and just hang out with nature and God, and I really didn't want the drama, so I left myself. So.
And Crystal, you have a phone number you can be reached at?
Yeah.
And you also observed this?
My boyfriend observed the officer pulling in. Well, we know it's an officer now.
You know your boyfriend?
I'll let him talk.
Yeah, okay. Anybody else that you know?
There was me, there's Sarah, there was like four or five kids that were up there that were having the barbecue. It's
what was being barbecued?
They were just barbecuing. I think from what we hear, they're not allowed to barbecue up at the cliff, so that I guess that was his grounds. I don't know.
Did you hear him say anything about marijuana that he was investigating?
No, he never said anything except stop and slam the old lady in the ground. That's it. And Donna is a really sweet person. She's not a violent person. I know Donna personally. And all she ever does is try to help people and stick to herself. And when she feels like her rights are violated, she will speak up and say it.
Now, what about White Dove or Linda Allen? Do you know her?
Who?
White Dove.
White Dove? White Dove was sitting there smoking a joint, which is
what she was doing.
She was sitting there.
Was did the op? Did you see any interaction between Sergeant Lamas and her?
Like I said, when I saw Dawn on the ground, I just kind of left.
Now, did you?
We
did,
left the scene.
Would you recognize the officer if you saw him again?
Oh, who wouldn't recognize a man who slams a little lady on the ground, puts his foot in his chest, just like
him? All these police officers look alike to me.
Yeah.
What can I say?
No, he's a heavy set, bigger guy.
And did he have a badge on?
No, he was dressed in black clothing.
And was the squad car marked?
No. It was a black vehicle and a man dressed in black.
Did it have a siren or a light on it?
No lights, no sirens, just a guy flying in behind her RV and attacking her. That's pretty much basically what we thought it was happening.
And
until he announced himself and the kids started screaming police brutality, because in a way I don't think that he had any right to do that to that lady at all.
And you didn't see any of the subsequent questioning? You took off?
No, I just took off because I didn't like the energy.
Right. Were you at this thing, too, or no? Okay. We've been talking with?
Crystal.
Crystal, thanks, and I'll play this on free radio.
If you go up to the three trees, I guarantee you there's quite a few family members that would like to talk to you personally.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll do that now.
You should go up to the three trees, because that's where Sarah hangs out, and you should really talk to her.
I've actually interviewed Sarah.
She's the one that actually witnessed the assault from the front door. What I told you in the middle is what she told me, so.
Right.
What I've seen and what I've heard, I pretty much told you, so.
Thank you, Chris.
I felt as what I heard, so.
Thank you. Okay, talking with?
Bliss.
Hey, thanks.
Okay, all right.
That was an interesting story.
You take care of yourself. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So Bliss, what happened with you?
What happened with me?
In terms of, you say you've had some problems with police?
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know if I want to be on the radio about it, though.
Okay, again, we're talking with?
Bliss.
And Bliss, you say you had an unusual, you heard some strong statements from a police officer on one occasion.
Yeah.
What did you hear?
I don't know. My friend was really, really hammered. She drank a lot of vodka, and I was there, but she was falling all over the place outside the bathrooms by borders and puking, and she had alcohol poisoning. And the cops came, and they weren't even, bothered with her. They kept interrogating me like it was my fault that my friend drank too much.
Had you been drinking?
Not very much. No, I wasn't intoxicated at the time. And I was just telling them the story, and then this one cop, this big, big blonde cop, came up to me, and he's like, "You know what? You're a bad liar. And you're a bad friend, and this world is a worse place because of people like you."
I would have to agree.
Yeah, really, huh?
So what were they asking you questions about? I mean,
they
were
just asking me, who gave her alcohol, and
was she underage?
And then they searched my bag. They just took it and went through it, and I didn't tell them that they could, And they took my pipe, and it's just, I don't know. And then every time, they just seem to have fun making fun of people, humiliating people, or being condescending,
And how old are you?
18.
So does this happen mostly with younger people, or have you observed it with...
I've observed it with a lot of different people. Like, if there's something about you that they don't think is, normal or acceptable in their little fascist regime thing, they just pick on you for it. And they try to get you in trouble for stupid little things like sitting on the planner or...
Have you been ticketed for these offenses?
No, I've gotten a couple tickets, though.
For?
Well, just for things that I deserve tickets for. But, I've seen...
Beating up your spouse, perhaps?
Oh, yes, yes. Battery robbery, no.
Aha.
No. But,
What kind of things have you been hassled with tickets for? What kinds of
things? Marijuana and alcohol,
In a way that was abusive toward other people or simply technically illegal?
Technically illegal. I was just, trying to hide out, and I was hanging out with people, and then the cops came and gave everyone tickets. But, that's not really my problem with them. I know that they just do that. I'd rather they didn't, but they do. I don't like it when they pick on people, though, and they hassle people and follow them around. And
you've seen this happen with particular people?
Yeah, there's certain people they just gang up on, people who really need their help, actually. Homeless people or mentally ill people or drug addicts or, people who really need help. They just make their life so much harder, and they make it impossible for them to ever recover.
Now, are you a longtime Santa Cruzan yourself, Liz?
Yeah, I was born here.
And are your folks still living here?
Yep.
And
yeah.
Are these attitudes your folks share, do you think?
Yeah, my folks aren't a big fan of the cops either.
What do you do when police officers approach you? Do you sort of attempt to vacate the area? Do you stand up for your own rights? Do you sort of take a middle course?
It really depends. I usually just try to have as little to do with it as possible. Because they're so dramatic. They blow everything out of proportion so much. And every little thing you say, they twist around and try to make it seem like you lied. And, you know, I just try to say hello, tell them my name, and I don't try to explain anything to them or... Because why bother, you know? I just try to get away and have as little to do with them as possible, really, if I encounter them.
Any positive experiences with police officers?
Yeah, you know, like, sometimes they can be understanding. There's a few that I like. There's a few cops that are good. Jones and Hoppy are good. They're good cops. For the most part, I don't have a problem with them.
You really resent it because you haven't been accepted into the police academy, right? That's the real reason.
And I really don't like their slogan on the side of their cars. You know, your police, our community. What's that mean? Like, they own the community and we're just stuck dealing with them? I don't like that. I think that's kind of got a double meaning there.
And
I must say, you know, I know that there need to be police. You know, I know that in the world...
Have you ever used the police?
Well, yeah, you know.
Under what circumstance?
Someone's beating their girlfriend with a coat hanger, you know.
Is that what you found? That happened?
Now, we're going to have to stop this because we are running over time. Coming up next is From the Cream to the Dregs. I want to thank particularly Shane for making this tape available. It fell off the top of my car, was crushed by another vehicle. And in a last-minute emergency operation before the show, these interviews are available because of his work. Thank you, Shane. I'll be back again on Sunday for another edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides at 9:30. Tune in then. Until then, give me a call at 423-HUFF if you want to talk. Thanks.
Nobody wins by your side. That wonderful group from days of yore who basically their name came about because of a mistake. Of course, Derek and the Dominoes. It should have been Eric and the Dominoes. Of course, Eric Clapton there with a fabulous studio version of Layla. It's one of those songs that just doesn't go bad with time. I'm Uncle Dennis. You're at 101 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. We're also on the Wide Weird Web at freakradio.org. Stay tuned for more of From the Cream to the Dregs. And while that exactly wasn't a Cream song, it'll have to do for now. We're going to venture on until about 11 o'clock tonight with more music from the 60s and the 70s. And, of course, we will have the Earth First Update at 9 o'clock and our Spotlight Group of the Week, which this week is going to be Stevie Vaughan. That's right, Stevie Vaughan. This is before he became Stevie Ray Vaughan. And I have a CD of Stevie Vaughan and Double Trouble appearing live in Austin, Texas. The CD is called In the Beginning, and it's one of the first live performances recorded for Stevie. And we will be getting into that right around 10 o'clock. So stay tuned for all of that. Right now, here's some Santana for you.